Welcome to Office Hours. In this episode, Leo Hanian, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, answers frequently asked questions from his video, Sweden's Experiment on Socialism. First question, is Sweden a socialist country?
The question is about Sweden, perhaps more broadly, the Scandinavian countries, and whether Sweden and those other countries are socialist countries. Great question. At one time, Sweden was very much a socialist country. This was the period from about 1968 up to about 1990, where the 1960s were a period of political turmoil. Swedish voters chose to vote in a government that was very much socialist. They made no bones about being socialist. And socialism means, to what extent does government play a role in the workings of the economy? And in particular, I like to define socialism as really a spectrum concept in terms of how many resources flow through the hands of government. Well, in Sweden, about 70% of the country's GDP, one way or the other, flowed through the hands of government. This was a disaster for the Swedish economy. Before the socialist economy came in, Sweden, on a per capita basis, was the fourth wealthiest in the world. Within just a few years, Sweden had fallen from fourth to 14th. Sweden lost the equivalent of about, in terms of the United States economy, about 16 million private sector jobs, as the government became involved in almost all areas of the economy. The Swedish people became so upset and so distressed with economic performance that after about 20 years of this, they voted in a market reform government. And today, Swedish is very much a market economy. The Swedish economy is one that's very, very different from the one that's perceived by Senator Bernie Sanders or Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who both think about Sweden as being their model government, as a socialist government. Well, what they don't refer to, and perhaps they don't know, is that the corporate tax rate in Sweden is lower than in the United States. Now, both Senator Sanders and Representative Ocasio-Cortez have argued for much higher taxes on corporations. Another difference is in schooling. In Sweden, there are for-profit K-12 schools, and there's a highly efficient voucher system. Well, in the United States, there's no for-profit schools. There's no very, very little voucher system. And these kind of ideas would be anathema to Senator Sanders or Representative Ocasio-Cortez. So when people think about Sweden as being socialist, they just don't have a very accurate picture of the Swedish economy today. And the bottom line is, Sweden is a small country. They're very open. And if they're going to be able to compete with all those other countries, including larger countries such as Germany, they've got to have very limited government regulation if their businesses are going to be competitive. And they have very limited government regulation. They have to make sure that there's plenty of an incentive for people to invest in Swedish businesses. And with a very low corporate tax rate, that incentive is in place. Otherwise, Sweden just simply couldn't compete. They wouldn't be able to compete with all these other countries. So the Swedish economy is very different than from the perspective that some policymakers here today have. In fact, the Danish prime minister, during a talk, when there was a lot of discussion about Northern European socialism, actually said, he went off on a tangent and said, hey, I'm here today to talk about some aspects of our economy, but I'm going to go off point for a second, just say right off the bat, our economy is fundamentally a market economy. We are not a socialist economy. So there's very large misperceptions about what's going on in those countries.
Does democratic socialism mean something different than socialism?
Great question. What does democratic socialism mean? How is it different from socialism? Ask any political scientist or any economist to define socialism, you might get a slightly different answer. You might get a slightly different answer about what democratic socialism is. So here's a really simple way to think about it. Socialism is when the government has control over the means of production. Think back to the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, socialist. That was a collection of countries which absolutely the government was in control of the means of production. China is another case, particularly China under Mao. Soviet economy, socialist economy, which was totally controlled by the government. And what we know, sadly, from experience, is that these types, hardcore socialist countries, have awful economic records. China under Mao, between 1959 and 1961, had approximately 40 to 50 million people die of starvation. That would never happen in a market economy, because market economies don't have persistent huge shortages of food. The market makes sure that doesn't happen. In China, Mao sent way too many farmers from the field to the factory to build military equipment and industrial equipment. And Mao's food scientists told the remaining farmers how to plant their crops. And they made a big mistake. They implemented the wrong planting methods, and there weren't enough farmers, and there simply wasn't nearly enough food to go around. 50 million people died. It didn't have to be that way. It occurred because of socialism. So we know that is a horrendous way to run a country. Now, democratic socialism. What that means is a country where the government is involved in a lot of the economy, say 40%, 50% or more. But there are democratic institutions in place in which people are able to vote, either with elected representatives or directly, whereas there's really no voting in China under Mao or in the USSR. So those would be the main distinction. Democratic socialism, the government is playing a huge role in the economy, but there are still democratic institutions in place.
What countries now or in the past could accurately be described as socialist?
A great, great question. Which countries were socialist? The USSR, after the Russian Revolution in, back in the day, 1920s, up until about 1990, when people had just had enough of not having freedom, of not having economic growth, of not having economic opportunity, and economic reforms were implemented, and the USSR broke up. China is another example of a socialist country. Under Mao, roughly from the time of the Chinese Civil War, and interestingly enough, up to about 1980 or so, when Chinese farmers became so distressed about how little economic growth and how much little economic freedom they had, they started violating Chinese party rules, which said, you grow your crops and you give them to us, all of it, and then we'll give you back some food. Well, the Chinese farmers became so upset with this that they decided to go rogue and said, you know what? We're going to grow stuff and we're going to keep it ourselves and we'll give a little bit to the Socialist Party. Well, this was such a huge success that China had no other decision other than to let people begin to try to produce for themselves. And since about 1980, China has implemented a number of economic reforms, privatized a lot of industry. And the reason why the average Chinese person now, their per capita income is about $9,000 per year rather than $500 per year is because of free market economic reforms. Because socialist economies work so horribly, we have far fewer today that would be called really purely socialist economies. There are some in Africa where there is essentially dictatorships and people have very little economic freedom that perhaps might qualify as pure socialist economies. But thankfully, we've learned from the historical record, an economy with freedom and democracy and relatively little limited government is what we found to be the recipe for economic success, economic prosperity, really for everyone, not just the top, but for everyone.
What are the disadvantages of capitalism, and how do they compare to the advantages of socialism?
Great question. It's about what are the downsides to capitalism, and what are the plus sides to socialism? So to answer this question, I'm going to step back for a second. I'm going to step back away from the words of capitalism and socialism and think more broadly about, as a society filled with people, we all have our own incentives. We want to be able to consume. We want to be able to take care of our families. We want to be able to retire. How does society, what kind of economic system does society put in place? And what are we particularly worried about? Well, we're worried about a safety net. You know, what happens if I become disabled? Will we be thrown out of our home? Will my family not have enough to eat? This is a fundamentally important question any society has to confront. And I think this is really the crux of when we think about different economic systems, how well do we take care of people who have had some bad luck, some bad shocks? They haven't been able to access the opportunities. How do we take care of that? So from a capitalist point of view, think people, and I can understand this concern, think, hey, you know what? Competition is brutal. Either, you know, survive or fail. And people rightly can be worried about that. In a well-functioning capitalist society, there is going to be failure. There'll be business failures, and there might be people who are at a job where their skills or qualifications may not be a good match for that job. What we want to make sure of is they have other opportunities. And if bad things happen, they have a safety net to fall back on. That's the challenge for every capitalist economy to confront. And to be honest, we always haven't done a very good job with that. If we look at safety nets, we may not have them working very efficiently. For many, many years, we made welfare payments contingent on the dad in a family being gone. Well, that was an awful idea. We had tons of poor families, children growing up in households where they never saw their dad. They never saw the person who was their father. And this was just, I think most political science and sociologists agree, this was a horrible idea. So we have to have safety nets that work efficiently and then have the right incentives in place. And it's a hard thing to do. Let's look at socialism. Okay, they explicitly have a lot of stuff in place to presumably take care of those who are on the bottom of the income distribution. How well does that work? They also face challenges because people are people. Whether we live in a capitalist country or a socialist country, you and I, we have incentives. We want to take care of ourselves and our families, no matter what type of economy we live in. So the exact, you know, the same incentive issues arise under socialist types of economies. In Western Europe, for years and years, disability payments were incredibly generous and long-lasting. Unemployment benefits were very generous and long-lasting. And this led to very low levels of labor force participation, very high levels of disability, very high levels of unemployment. Taxes had to rise further to support these payments. Economic growth suffered. And European countries finally realized that, you know what, we're not doing a very good job of trying to deal with the safety net in our country. So whether it's socialism or capitalism, the fundamental issue is how do we support those who have had some bad luck? And what I would say is in our capitalist economies, a lot of regulation has made things worse. K through 12 schooling in the United States is not performing well. A lot of research shows this because not because of free markets, because of well-intentioned but misguided regulations. In the United States, we have now extremely high home prices, particularly in the West Coast and the East Coast. Why? It's not because of the free marketplace. It's because of a ton of government regulations that prevent building of new homes or that delay housing construction, sometimes for 25 or 30 years. So it's a fundamentally difficult problem, whether it's a socialist country or a capitalist country. And as voters, we need to demand that our elected officials think about this carefully and wisely and make the needed reforms to our social safety net that can support people at the bottom.
Is there more equality in socialist countries than in more capitalist countries? Aren't people more equal in socialist countries than in capitalist countries?
Okay, that's a terrific question about equality and what type of economic system promotes equality. Isn't socialism more effective promoting equality than a capitalist system? Complex question, because there's really two dimensions. There's the size of the pie, and then there's how we divide the pie up across individuals in the economy. The United States, of all the major countries, is the richest in the world. One reason is because we have relatively low levels of regulation, relatively low levels of taxes, and because we've been a very friendly place for entrepreneurship. We make it relatively easy for entrepreneurs to try out ideas. And out of every 100,000 or so new business startups, one is going to be Amazon and Jeff Bezos. One will be Tesla and Elon Musk. One will be Microsoft and Bill Gates. So we need to throw a lot of seeds out there, because economic growth depends upon those new unicorn businesses. And when we think about inequality, and we think about Jeff Bezos is now worth over $200 billion, and we think, God, you know, isn't there something wrong with that? Well, let's just step aside and ask ourselves, how much value has Amazon created for us? How was Amazon able to almost seamlessly scale up their business operations during the pandemic and make it possible for high-risk individuals, such as people with comorbidities, elderly people? How did we make it possible for them to receive two-day shipping if it wasn't for Jeff Bezos and his amazing idea about Amazon? How are people who live out in rural areas? They're able to buy millions of goods now from Amazon, where they might have only access to a few goods and services living in a rural area. So if we think about the top and the bottom, we have to think about what has the top done for us. And they have done just a remarkable amount. Let me just give you one more example. The iPhone. The iPhone has a computer chip or chips within it that are more powerful today. And today's iPhone, 2020, today's iPhone is more powerful than the state-of-the-art supercomputer from about 1995 that the National Weather Service used or the U.S. Department of Defense. How did that come about? Because of innovation and creation at Apple Computer, who were trying to make their shareholders happy by making a lot of profits. The World Bank recently said that the most important factor in motivating growth in economic growth in Africa was not the United Nations or not government aid from us or another government or some NGO. It was the iPhone. The iPhone has allowed people in Africa to carry out financial transactions without having to have a bank account. They can get advice on how to grow crops off the internet, and it's led to an explosion in women's entrepreneurship. So these are the aspects of life that are easy to overlook, but are the outcome of a vibrant capitalist economy where some people become remarkably successful, remarkably wealthy. Now let's look at the flip side. In Europe, much more regulation, much higher taxes. Amazon didn't occur there. Tesla didn't occur there. Apple didn't occur there. The last time I checked on the Financial Times index of the top 500 companies, which are the world's largest 500 companies measured by their market capitalization, not one European country is on there that was born after 1975. Not one. We need Jeff Bezos and Amazon. We need Bill Gates and Microsoft. We need Elon Musk and Tesla. They transform our world. They become extremely wealthy, but the amount they create for us is a beach relative to the grains of sand they have. So we need to make the pie bigger, and we need to have in place government institutions that facilitate the creation of opportunities. And that's through a lot of freedom. That's through regulation that exists, not to impede business, but to offer reasonable protection. Too often government regulation is put in place with, you know, good intentions, but it often doesn't work the way we want it to.